could double if your company has a matching gift program. Your help makes a difference. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
The Unruffled Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m. And time for the What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT, Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, with steadfast volunteer Bob Gartner helping me out on the boards while Jake engages in some what I'm sure is delinquent behavior during spring break while I'm here working. You know, every week, the best storytellers grace the studio, each taking us on astonishing journeys before returning us safely to the present. I've had the honor of hosting some of the most talented tellers who ever told the tale, but they come from poignant narratives, complete with the reflections and revelations with which they come, to the fanciful folk tales that transport us into those enchanted worlds that keep us sane. We're fortunate to be engaged by them all, and occasionally we meet the consummate teller. The professional who never lets listeners forget that the magical connection between the storyteller and listener is raw and real. It matters. This rare breed of teller is sitting next to me right now. For nearly four decades, Lauren Niemi has been creating and performing stories of all kinds for audiences of all ages. From fringe festivals to the Great Wall of China, from Turtle Mountain Reservation in rural North Dakota, to working with artists and social workers in post-Troubles Belfast, North Ireland. Lauren lives the stories he tells. He has facilitated storytelling workshops, provided presentation coaching, and conducted organizational consulting around the country, working with a plethora of businesses that include advertising agencies, nonprofit organizations, and government programs. His clients are as diverse as the Fifth District Federal Reserve Bank, DDB and Leo Burnett Advertising, the Minneapolis Community Development Agency, the National Legal Aid and Public Defenders Association, UNUM Insurance, and Walt Disney World. Lauren is also a poet, the author of the new Book of Plots about the use of narrative forms in oral and written stories, and co-author with Elizabeth Ellis of the critically acclaimed Inviting the Wolf In, Thinking About Difficult Stories, about the value and necessity of stories that are hard to hear and harder to tell. He teaches storytelling in the theater program at Metro State University, as well as storytelling and messaging for the University of St. Thomas Executive Leadership Institute. He holds an MA in American Culture from Hamline University. And Lauren, I'm so glad you're here. We can't talk because we've been drinking all day. But other than that, we're absolutely fine. I'm so glad you're here. And you know how much I enjoyed the concert last night. Lauren did a super concert for the Houston Storytellers Guild. It was a small but very appreciative group. And one of the things that really struck me is when you told us when you knew you were a storyteller. You had helped kids in juvenile corrections, and you helped them earn their GEDs, and you used storytelling as a pedagogical instrument, as a way of teaching them. And I really love that, because that's something that most people don't understand. They don't understand how storytelling can really engage. And you're off back to the Twin Cities.
Yep.
Right?
Tomorrow morning, head, 1,200 miles north.
Yeah. So where tell us where you've been. You've been at festivals at every turn.
In this last tour, I started off in Indiana, and then I swung down along Route 66, the Mother Road, stopping at various places along the way, and did a reading in Albuquerque, and then was at the Tejas Storytelling Festival up in Denton, Texas, which was a great fun adventure. So, yeah. And here I am now.
Yeah, and here you are now, and I'm so glad that you are. You know, in Storycatcher, Making Sense of Our Lives, Christina Baldwin writes, "Something is happening in our story, and we don't yet know it. We're just in it. We live in a story like fish lives in water. Now, I'm thinking her point of view is similar to yours when you claim to live the story you tell. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, what's interesting about it is that we are all living stories. I mean, stories frame the way we see the world. It becomes the way we articulate who we are in relationship to family, in relationship to other people, in relationship to work, in relationship to culture. So the question is it conscious or is it not? And conscious storytelling allows you to actually move that frame into a very positive and creative direction. Unconsciousness, you know, it becomes awkward conversation.
Awkward conversation, right. But yeah. It validates our life. Storytelling really
right.
does validate our
right.
lives.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. When someone says, well, what did you do last weekend? You know, that's an invitation to story.
Well, you know, we're going to get to some stories because you have a bunch of them. And I want to make sure that we get to at least a couple. Lauren, your new fringe show, Bad Brother, looks at religion and anti-war radical politics in 1969, the year I was born. Only kidding. I wish. Right? And you are right when you told me that there's a whole generation that knows nothing about what happened then and how those issues are still the issues of now. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Now, I know that it's tough for you to respond in a sentence or two. It's tough for me. But in a sentence or two, and I know you hate those parameters, what do you think the reason is for this generation's lack of awareness? I mean, you and I studied history. I tell my students all the time, I wasn't around during the Civil War, but I've heard of it. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So what's happening?
Well, part of it is the immediacy of the digital culture. So many of the students I see now, many of the people who come to fringe shows, their memory is no longer than their immediate experience, you know, on the internet or, you know, the last text they received. But more importantly, because all kinds of information, an ocean of information is available on the internet, it all has the same value on some perverse level. And so they can get facts, but they don't get meaning.
Right.
And the meaning is what we really need to know, because it is in the meaning of those events in the late 60s, early 70s, where we see the parallels to the issues that are facing us now.
Yeah, we've never been exposed to more information ever in our lives, and I think people know less than they ever have. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing. They can't discern between fact and fancy. Just, you know, we can watch politics and know that, right?
No. Now, I'm not going there tonight.
Yeah, I know. It's a tough thing not to do, but we won't. Now, you have a bunch of stories that fall under this fringe program, but tell us a story you want to share this evening, please.
Well, one of the stories, I was walking. I was not hitchhiking. I was walking out of Colorado. I was within sight of the New Mexico border when the sheriff came up the road. And first he came past on the other side, and I knew he was going to turn around. And he turned around, and he came up behind me. And he gets out of the car, and he says, "You, here." And he put my head down on the hood of the car, his engine running. It was a hot, you know, hot, hot, hot. And I'm spread there, and he's going through my pack looking for things, looking for marijuana, looking for LSD, looking for weapons, you know. And I had none of those things in that pack because I was traveling very light and very smart. But finally he says, "I don't trust you. Get in the car." And so in the back of the squad car, and we go back to Pueblo, and they're holding me in a cell. They haven't arrested me, but they're holding me in a cell, and he says, "We're going to do a check." And this is the moment where I think to myself, I wonder if my FBI file is going to show up. Because I knew I had an FBI file. I knew that, in fact, a week before, I had met with that sheriff on that border of New Mexico. I had been in a courtroom in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And in that courtroom in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I had seen many people who I knew, be declared guilty of burning draft files. In that courtroom, every day as I left that room, I had been photographed by the FBI, pushed up against the wall, had my picture taken. So you always try to have a nice smile, consistent from day to day. So I knew I had a file, and the question would be, would it come up? And if it did come up, what would it mean to that sheriff? But to my surprise and to my delight, 2 hours later, he said, "Well, Nothing came up. You're free to go. On to the next bus. And he pointed out the door at the bus station. And I walked out with my backpack, and I thought, yes. I walked to a grocery store. I looked for every car or every truck that had New Mexico license plates. And then when they came with their groceries, I said, hey, you got room for me? Yeah, take me across the border? And this one sweet old man said, yeah, I got room for you. Do you want to ride in the cab with me or in the back with the goat?
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. And that's it? You're going to stop right there?
I'm going to stop right there.
Okay,
yeah,
but what happened with the goat? What happened?
Oh, I rode in the cab and my backpack was back with the goat who tried to eat.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Tell us what you mean by fringe programs.
So in America, mm-hmm. in Canada, in around the world, there are what are known as fringe festivals. Mm-hmm. Generally, they are free. They're performance-based. They could be music, they could be dance, they could be drama, they could be comedy, they could be storytelling. Typically, they're 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, I always make my shows 55 minutes, so I know I've got room for the audience to laugh. You know, some fringes are first come, first serve. Some fringes are by lottery. Some fringes provide you with venues. Other fringes provide no venues. You find your own. But the common feature is that all of them provide access without censorship to performance.
Access without censorship.
Yeah.
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 Neat.
So.
Yeah. Let me, you know, we have a couple of minutes and I really wanted to probe into this. I had mentioned earlier that there was a time when you first knew that you were a storyteller.
Right.
Now, I love this story. Tell us how that happened.
So.
I'll just set it up. You were corrections.
So, no, I had been a regular, basic high school teacher. Okay. I was mm-hmm. teaching art and social studies. Oh, you want? Here's a little side moment.
Okay. So, we like side moments.
Yeah. While I was teaching in Appleton, Wisconsin, I took one of my art classes on a field trip to see Joe McCarthy's grave, Senator Ooh. McCarthy's grave. And one of the students I had in that art class was a young woman by the name of Greta von Sersten. And I have often said that she wound up at Fox News in the position she now is because the spirit of Joe McCarthy leapt out of the grave and went right up her leg.
Oh, brother.
I blame myself. Brother.
I do. Now, there's a great side note. There's a great side note.
Yeah.
You're a teacher. You were a teacher.
So I was a teacher in a regular high school, and I got a request to come work with juvenile justice offenders in a program, an experimental program in southern Minnesota. And so I went with a number of other people. We were all – in order to get in the program, you had to be mandated by a judge. So I'm sitting in a courtroom, and the judge is got a kid in front of him. You know, it's like the judge says, hey, so why did you steal that car on your 16th birthday? And the kid says, I didn't steal any car. It was, you know, the car was just there, you know. So the judge says, well, all right, well, here's your choices. You can go to Red Wing, which was the, you know, state juvenile correction facility just up the road from Winona. You can go into the military or you can go into this program. And the kid, of course, the kid always thinks, oh, wow, I'll go into the program because it's easy. But what they never said was when you went into the program, you stayed in the program until you got a GED or until you had work skills. Mm-hmm. You know, so kids often were in the program for 2-3 years. So and all of these kids, the basic common denominator was that the regular school system had failed them. Regular education had failed them. Yeah. And so we had to have alternatives. And so we began to do various kinds of stories. Some of them were probing stories, narrative program. You know, why did you steal that car? Well, it was there. Well, how was it there? You know, what did it feel like for you to drive that car? We, by using a combination of just questioning kids and having them tell their stories over and over and over again, we can move them from being victims
right.
to being responsible.
Beautiful, beautiful. So, beautiful. Yeah, I had mentioned to you, and I know that I've mentioned to our listeners, too, that years ago I used to work in law enforcement and training. And one time I was at LEMIT, the Law Enforcement Management Institute in Huntsville, and I got a call from an officer that I knew at Huntsville. And they said he said to me, you know, there are three teachers here who were trying to teach. They were not death row inmates, but they were going to be there a long time, English, to get their GED. And I'm thinking, okay, what do you want for me? And they said, well, they're having a hard time. Could you come here and maybe talk to these three inmates? And I had some experience in circumventing conflict, I guess. In any event, on my way home, I stopped over there and I asked the inmates what the problem was. And they said to me, well, you know, these teachers want us to learn to write. And we're not going to write. We're going to be here forever, man. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. And I had found out en route to the cell that each of these six men have children under the age of 10. They were given 5 minutes every week to talk with them. That's all. And I asked them, I said, you know, you're only given 5 minutes. That can't be a long time. What if you were taught how to write a letter? What if you were taught how to write a letter to your child saying, I love you? How many would you like to do that? With some trepidation, all of a sudden, all six started to raise their hands. So you want to learn to write a letter to tell your children how much you love them. Well, these two, you know, lovely ladies will help you do that. And I left as fast as I could. Well, the point is that it isn't the same kind of story, but it's the same sort of principle.
Right, it is the same
principle.
It's
a matter of giving them an opportunity to know that their ability to articulate things on paper, in this case, is everything to them. Mm-hmm. Because it was the only way for them to even come within waving distance of physically connecting with the people that they love most. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are enjoying storytelling icon Lauren Niemi on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Lauren, as I told you, I love inviting the wolf in, and I've used it in my storytelling course because I wanted my students to know that their stories is, in fact, their lives. And with life stories come difficult stories, ones that require courage and ownership. When Elizabeth Ellis, your good friend and co-author, was on this program over a year ago, I told her what I want to tell you. And that is that what I learned most from that book is that I needed to give myself permission when needing to tell tough stories. And I shared with you earlier over dinner what some of those tough stories were about seeing my son, and about another one when my biological father died 4 years ago and someone said, I'm sorry. Well, I hadn't seen him since I was 14 and I didn't know how to respond to that. Mm-hmm. These are really difficult stories that I think so many of us experience. Now, you teach storytelling, and I'd like to know, what do you tell a student, or anyone for that matter, who asks or who says, I don't really have a story anybody wants to hear?
Well,
what do you say?
In fact, you do have stories, and people do want to hear them. The difference or the quality is always to figure out what is the starting point and the ending point for the story. We all have much more than we can tell. We have much more emotional connection than we can tell. To find a story that people really want and people will really value, you have to ask, what is the story about? What does it mean to me? What could it mean to someone else? And then you have to make conscious decisions. And the most difficult decision for people to make is not to say, oh, what will I tell, but what will I leave out?
Right. Yeah. And as you know, I was concerned about point of entry. Where do you really start a story?
Yeah.
And I know this is a tough question, but what kind of advice can you give us on the best place to start a personal story?
I think the best place to start a personal story is the point at which a listener feels a connection to either an emotion or an action. So as an example, if I were, I tell the story about when I had a car that got totaled in on a rather unusual way. And I start off the story by saying, I could see the tree coming toward me. It was not a good moment. I was 30 feet in the air, leaving the road, leaving the curve. And the tree, it stopped the car. It stopped the car going forward, and it stopped the car from going down. But when I opened the door, it was still 30 feet to the ground.
Very good. It reminds me of accident reports I used to read when I did some training at the police academy. And one of them read, the telephone pole came out of nowhere and struck my front end. Talk about a lack of ownership. And then it vanished, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. And then it vanished. Well, you know, one thing that's never difficult to say is that our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is the best place to learn to tell, listen, and really just enjoy the art of storytelling. They meet the fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. p.m. at the Printing Museum at 1324 West Clay, where Lauren wowed his audience last night. Check him out at all the fun happenings, including the Liars Contest, coming up on April 9th, and that's the truth, at www.houstonstorytellers.org. And by the way, Laura, Warren, Greg, and I know if you have any ideas for guest tellers, themes, feedback on previous shows. Just let us know at drhank@kpft.org, and I promise we will get back to you. It's rare that a personal and traditional story are told on the same program, Lauren, but since you are artistically ambidextrous, you're just the guy to do it. But I have the feeling that given your style, the next story, which I think might be traditional, might not really be, right, kind of, sort of?
Well, no, you will know this story.
Okay.
You will know this story. So it always starts the same way. It always starts with her being told she needs to go to grandmother's house. It always starts with her taking the basket. It always starts with her going down the path. You know, that never changes from version to version. What does change, though, is what happens after. After she meets the wolf, after the wolf goes to grandmother's house. In the first version, it was very simple. Knock, knock. Enter. Oh, grandma, you do not look the same. Chomp, swallow, bite. That's it. The wolf eats her. That story probably wasn't very satisfying. It was.
But you're right. It is recognizable.
It is recognizable. And not only that, but right. that story, when you think about it, that story is the most accurate. But, you know, stories have to have a larger frame. And so in this later version, in the next version, it becomes a cautionary tale. Oh, grandma, what big eyes you have. Oh, grandma, what big ears you have. Oh, grandma, what big teeth you have. Except in the second version, the wolf doesn't eat her. He has his way with her. And suddenly she is a wiser girl. Suddenly she is no longer an innocent child. Suddenly she says, oh, wolf, I feel the call of nature. I have to go. And the wolf, who at this point is proved not to be very intelligent, says, here, tie this string around your ankle and go. And so she ties the string around her ankle and she leaves the room and ties the string to a chair and goes home. And there's a moral lesson there, but it's still not entirely interesting. It's still not entirely accurate. So by the time the brothers Grimm get to it, by the time, you know, Jacob and Wilhelm get to it, we need to goose it up a little bit. And so now we have the wolf in grandmother's bedclothes. Now we have, indeed, oh, grandma, what big eyes you have. What big ears you have. What big mouth you have. And now we have a physical impossibility. The wolf swallows her whole. Swallows her whole. And we have a real dilemma at this moment. You know, I mean, what happens next? We have to bring in the external force. We have to bring in the civilizing element, the woodsman. We have to snip, 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 cut her out of the wolf. And she pops out whole and complete. This is, in every version of the story, it gets stranger and stranger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Until we arrive at the Disney version, in which there is no snipping, there is no swallowing, there is, you know, the woodsman dispatches of the wolf before any damage is done. And at this point, what had been a story about menace and a story about lessons learned the hard way has now become mush.
Beautiful. Well, now the Little Red Riding Hood trilogy begs this one very basic question, and that is, how do you make the story your own and at the same time maintain the integrity of a tale?
The way you make the story your own is you have to, for me, it's a matter of finding those connections between the story and my life and the culture we live in. So there's lots of, you know, I mean, if I were to make the story truly my own at this point, you know, I might have an entirely different take on it. It might be, you know, the blonde at the bedside mm-hmm. calls the wolf to her. She knows what she wants, and he wants what she wants, and therefore happiness Happiness.
Oh, yeah.
Happiness.
Who would the audience be to that version?
I think pretty much adults. Yeah.
Pretty much adults.
Pretty much adults. Yeah.
Yeah. Big time adults. Big time adults. Yeah.
But adults says.
But I love it. That would bring them in. That would bring them in. Yeah. I like it. I like it. You are listening to my guest storyteller, the very talented Laura Niemi, only on listener sponsored, corporate free Pacifica 90.1 FM, KPFT. Houston. Next week, Greg Audell is going to be hosting guest storyteller Stephen Wexler, physician, lawyer, playwright, son-in-law to Martha Turner, and I don't know what he does on Tuesdays, but this guy is unbelievable, and he's got an awful lot of stories to prove it. You don't want to miss that show, but then again, why would you want to miss this show at all? Because, as I'm sure you
agree,
we're
having fun.
I mean, this is, isn't this probably the best show you've ever been on in your entire life? I thought so.
Yes. Yes. All right.
I just wanted to let you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm nodding assent.
Tell us how we can contact you if we need to.
If you need to contact me, the easiest way is Niemi Story, NIEMISTORY, okay. And then you can do either AOL, because I'm a dinosaur, or you can do Gmail, because I'm not.
Very good. I use AOL, and you know, it's never working, and we just can't find anything else because we'll think people won't be able to find us because that's our address. I think you and I are the only two that have it.
No, actually, every one of my significant storytelling partners has an AOL address still.
It's, and how old are they?
Generally, they're all. We're all in our 50s and 60s.
Are we all pretty much near death?
Yeah, well,
okay.
We are.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs marching through the world with the young mammals circling around, waiting for the meteor.
Yeah, I know. We just found water in our. I know. We just invented running water. I got you. Very, very good. I love it. Listen, who was the storyteller in your home growing up? Did you have one? Is there any kind of influence going on in your home?
Interestingly enough, the storyteller in my family, on one level, would be my father, but my father didn't tell stories per se. He told jokes. And when my father died, and we, at his memorial service, 8 or 9 of my cousins, and we all sat around, and everyone told the same joke, interpreting it as they would interpret it, my father telling the joke. And it's a beautiful little joke, but I can't tell it on the radio.
Yeah, right. Even you can't even change the words. Ah, that would just change the...
Well, no, because it requires the use of a physical prop. So,
brother. Okay. Well, listen, but there's some culture going on here with your storytelling background. You are Finnish. It doesn't mean you're finished. It means you are finished.
Right. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. So,
Suomalainen. Suomalainen poika.
Right. Suomalainen poika. Now, is Finland? This is a very ridiculously naive question, but how significant is Scandinavia in the world of storytelling? I mean,
Finland,
other than Hans Christian Andersen.
Oh, well, I'm not going there. I'm not.
But
Finland produced the Kalevala. It's the Finnish national epic, and it's an incredibly beautiful collection of charms, spells, little stories, Väinö Mainamon, the sorcerer who sings the world into being.
Wow.
Right? The mistress of the north. Ilmarin the smithy, who creates the Sampo with three cranks, one crank producing gold or wheat, one crank producing salt, one crank, right? That gets lost in the sea. Ilmarin has a wife who gets killed, and he goes to make himself a new wife. He makes a wife out of silver, but she does not satisfy because she's always cold.
So. Oh, my gosh. We have to do this again. No kidding. We have to do this again. Right. This is one of the fastest 30 minutes that we've experienced on this show. Storytellers change us by the stories they tell, stories that are universally accessible, through which people make meaning of things that matter. And Laura Niemi, you do this better genuinely than most anyone on the planet, and I'm both honored and very grateful that you joined me here this evening on So What's Your Story, and I'm really hoping that one day you will return.
Well, I would like to. Thank you very much.
I would love that. Scooter is up next with The Inner Side to complete the back side of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and Greg Warren, Laura and I will keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Lamp from The Prison Show.
And I'm Grace Miller from Rehab Bar on the Bayou. We're here to tell you The Prison Show is going to rehab Saturday, April the 2nd.